For instance, if I was riding in Holland and I was knocked down by a lorry or a delivery truck, the police would show up and they would ask the driver, why did you hit the cyclist? Now, the driver has the ability to rebut that presumption. The presumption is he did something wrong by knocking me off. And this really gets people's blood boiling, but they have to hear the rest of the story.
Well, recognize that voice? That's my guest, Bob Mionski, author of Bicycling and the Law. Bob, out of Portland, Oregon. Of course, Portland, a platinum-level city. Gets a lot of experience. Of course, he's a formerly professional cyclist. Bob has got great stories, as he hints, as he teases with that intro. We're going to get into that today. We've got a great show with Bob Mionski. Thanks for joining me. And I'm your host, Frank Peters, and you're listening to CDM Cyclist, a new vision of urban life where people matter more than motor vehicles. Bob, he's been on the show before. He's got a lot of material, Bob, and we have a great time today. One thing you'll get a kick out of on today's show is, I think when you invite Bob on the show, the interview starts the minute the microphones get turned on. So ordinarily, some of the intro, some of the warm-up, well, it seemed like the show just took off. So a little bit different how we start the show today. Let's get going.
Thanks for these, man. That was really generous of you.
Yeah, they look good, too.
Well, I wasn't thinking I was going to wear them around, but maybe I will.
Yeah. And get myself set up here. I got my studio lights on today there, huh? Isn't that a gadget?
Do you broadcast your Skype? Your view?
I don't. The video part, no. I'll just toss it. But I find that my subjects enjoy seeing who they're talking to. I think it's a comfort for some.
It's part of our human history, I suppose, to look at somebody in the face and talk to them.
Ah, well, as simple as that. Well, speaking of brilliant insights, Bob, you were on the show not that long ago, 6 weeks or so. Several things have happened since then. One, I've gone out and gotten a mirror for my bicycle. And I can't understand how I ever lived without it, huh? So, thank you.
Surprised. It's interesting because, parenthetically, I have a puppy on my lap. So, I had a confluence of a bunch of things this morning, including an emergency phone call and my internet going out and my girlfriend having to leave. And so I have a puppy on my lap, but I don't think it's going to be a problem. With regards to the mirror, I have never been charged with being a very safe cyclist. I'm safe, but I'm kind of a thrill seeker. Mm-hmm. And in spite of that reputation, not using a mirror now is something that I would be reticent to do. And so I look at all the people that are safety conscious that are not using mirrors. And like you, I think they should at least give it a try for sure.
So I got one of the bar end type mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a couple of bikes. So every time I go down to the garage, that is the decision now. I'm going for the bike with a mirror. Anyway, it's a great comfort. We'll move on to more substantial things, I know, but it's a great comfort to be able to see, let's say, an obstruction in your path, of course, right? And to be able to look down and see that the coast is clear or it isn't for you to make a move. It reduces the stress, and we're all city cyclists to some extent. So that was a great recommendation.
Well, I'm glad it worked out for you, and I hope you let your listeners know about it. I have a... I also think it's good in the country. So,
yeah. So, Bob, we bumped into each other. We got to meet each other face-to-face in Washington, D.C. just a few weeks ago at the National Bike Summit. We've talked since then via email. it felt like it was 3 a.m. for me. I think it was 3 a.m. for me. But anyway, it was nice to bump into you. We were on our way to, what was the name of that panel we were going to see?
Zero Deaths.
Zero Deaths, that's right, which that's a dramatic title. As they say in journalism, don't bury the lead. That was a great, catchy headline. What were some of the issues that were... it's all about reducing cyclist death. What were some of the issues that you remember being prominent in that discussion?
Well, I thought the hallmark was my friend and colleague, Ray Thomas. But there was also some other panelists from the AAA giving perspective from around the circle about bringing down our tragic accidents and deaths on the road. It was interesting because you could tell that the audience was definitely there at pro-bike.
Yes.
And so there were words given about drivers and about the police perspective. You could see that the crowd was a bit tepid. For instance, I give an example. There was one of the presenters was a part of an association of police, and he was listing out things that he thought were helping the traffic safety situation. One of them was rumple strips.
Yes.
And, of course, most cyclists dislike those and find them to be very hazardous. And yet the police officer listed it as one of the things that he thought, that the police chief, that was bringing more safety to the roadways, because he gave the example of an officer pulling over a vehicle and hearing an oncoming car leave the lane of travel and the noise that's produced by driving over the rumple strips. But some of them are designed in very unsafe ways for cyclists.
And a rumple strip is along the right edge of the roadway, Bob, separating traffic lanes from, say, bicycle lanes?
Yes, yeah, sometimes, you know, there, unfortunately, there are situations where you have to ride in the rumple strip lane. But, it's an auditory producing structure, which allows people to hear an oncoming car. But it had no consideration in its design and implementation for cycling.
Well, it makes me think now. We had a terrible fatality about a month ago here in Newport Beach. A cyclist, a triathlete, I believe 41 years old, going up one of the famous hills just a mile away from home here and hit from behind by a drunk driver. Rumple strip would have given him a moment's notice. Maybe, maybe not, huh?
Yeah, those are the ones that we can't really avoid, I guess.
Yeah, it's so random. I doubt you know the specifics of this situation, but maybe just in general. Somebody is at the scene, determined to be under the influence. They're going to be arrested and booked. Is she out driving her car the next day, though?
You're presenting an example like the one that you just referenced where there's a fatality?
Yes. Yeah, there's a fatality.
Well, I mean, it really does go across the board. If there's inebriation involved, I can say that the person will be brought into custodial control immediately. But I also have written about some prominent cases, both here in Canada and elsewhere in the world, where we have fatalities that, after the facts all come in, look like deserved a charge of vehicular homicide or worse. In those cases, the driver was allowed to leave the scene in their own vehicle. So it's interesting. That's one of the things that cyclist rights people point out, that there's a lack of parity between a motor vehicle versus motor vehicle collision and a motor vehicle versus pedestrian or cyclist collision.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that, Bob. I know there's great sensitivities to people driving home after killing a cyclist. But tell me more about that disparity.
Well, the problem is there's two different types of vehicles, and there's a prejudice, in my view, throughout the system and how we're treated. We're told that we have the same rights and the same responsibilities. But I can give you many examples of where there was a bicycle versus motor vehicle collision where there are no witnesses aside from the driver of the motor vehicle. And based on their testimony, the officer renders a decision on the spot and makes a decision about whether or not to give a sobriety test, whether to begin an investigation, saving all the evidence. And in many cases, let me interrupt to say there are a lot of police departments throughout this country. You know, in every little backwater town has a police officer with a light on top of their car. And there's a tremendous number of people to train. There's turnover in their force. So I'm not suggesting there's some intent behind the prejudice that I'm asserting. although in some cases there is, but it's a lack of education and information and nuance on the part of enforcement in some parts of this country and in some with some officers. So those are the events that make it up to my attention and the ones I talk about. I don't suggest those are a significant percentage of the incidents, but they do exist.
Bob, let's pause for a second and just let's double check your microphone.
It finally dawns on me on that me. Now, Bob's yeah, microphone
you look like you're wearing it just fine. How about
isn't
within
properly
Skype?
Connected. Skype? He's wearing it properly and it's plugged in. So it takes us just a minute to set Skype so that it's recognizing the microphone. And then, oh, you're going to love the sound improves immediately. Let's get right back to business.
Say hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
I
it's an old
that.
Joke.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, you sound 100% better.
Thank you.
Now, what I find the next thing that you need to do after something like that is recover. You know, the stress.
Maybe at least we're not live.
Yeah, right, right.
I listen to a lot of radio, and I have my whole life, and so I've heard all manner of happenstance. And I've even occasionally caught the on-air host pillaring his staff for the control room. And it really changed my view of the person because it wasn't his public personality. It was really nasty.
Yeah.
But he was a good guy, so I think he was just stressed and venting.
Well, that's often the test of character, isn't it? Is how you treat people when you are under stress, huh?
Oh, maybe. No. I'm going to have to think about that for a while.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, digress philosophically for a second, teaching my 15-year-old how to drive and talking about how he responds to certain situations, like impatience, right, in traffic. I say, if you just wait and let some, you know, discourteous driver go by or wait out the situation, you'll likely forget about it, you know, by dinner tonight. If, however, you do something really rude or, of course, get in an accident, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. So I'm trying to create, like, a long-term point of view how to bring patience to his driving skills. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's great, and I think it's actually subject matter for our interview at some point, if not today, another time, because that is the crux of a lot of animosity on the road, and it's something I've given a lot of thought to and researched on my own, and because of both my own personal behavior and because I'm looking for solutions for things that we can work on. I spend a lot of my time trying to answer the question, well, what should we do? And I often don't have a very good answer. I say, well, I'm here as giving the clarion call of what I see are the problems. And it had dawned on me, I need to start to offer at least some kind of solution. And that one is right where I started.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about that. Now, so people are looking to you. They want your insights on the law, but they're looking for more. Tell us what to do, Bob. Is that what you're implying?
Well, what happens, Frank, is when you pontificate about the status of bicycle safety out on the road and you lay out your case, invariably someone will say, well, what should we do? What can we do? And our knee-jerk response is typically, as humans, is how to deal with the problem. The acute issue, well, a driver cut me off, shall I call the police, should I get his tags, etc. But when we look at the overall issue, the social issue, that's a different viewpoint.
Right.
And from my own personal experience and also both on a bike and in a car, I came to realize that there's an issue to be, that if you want to change the way that you think about your experience on the road, you have to change the way you feel. It's not just a matter of how you think. For instance, you may say, and it works in a lot of aspects in life. You may say, I don't want to eat as much as I do or drink as much or whatever the habit is.
I was just listening to Michael Jackson on the radio here, Man in the Mirror.
Yeah, that's true. And it's not one of my favorite artists, but my daughter, for some reason, at 12 years old, has decided that she likes Michael Jackson. So he's on my
playlist.
And it comes up once in a while, but I liked him back in the day. Exactly, you've put your finger on the point, which is we have to look to ourselves. But when we do make that, when we take that perspective, one of the things we have to do is say, well, what can I do to change my behavior? Mm-hmm. And a classic example is when a motorist makes an unsafe pass, nearly knocking you over while you're on your bike because he's in a hurry, he or she needs to get somewhere, but then you overtake them again because they're caught in traffic, which I would deduce as a situation where the driver unnecessarily risked your safety right, with the illusion that he or she was going to get somewhere sooner. But back to the crux of the self-improvement or the mantra you can help yourself with, you have to change the way you feel about the other, not just what you think. You may decide, okay, there are bikes on the road, is good for everybody, good for the environment, lessens the traffic, it gets people out exercising, good for the healthcare, all of the litany of reasons that we would want to see people on the on a bike. And yet, when you're in a hurry and you're going down a small road and you see a cyclist in your way and you feel that they could move over to the right and you could pass them and be on your way, you get a visceral chemical reaction, you know, and at that point, it's really difficult to let your rational mind come to the fore. So what I did is I taught myself a trick. You know, if I have a repeated area where in my life where I have a feeling of anxiety or frustration, and I know it's likely to occur again in the future, I tell myself the next time it happens, I want you to stop and say, what result do I want here? And what I found was the first few times I tried it, it was to no avail. I had the same reaction, same bad experience. And then I recognized I had to be aware before it happened, before the chemistry was cooking up in my brain.
Give me an example, Bob.
So let's say I'm driving a car and I see a driver that's driving in a way that I feel is unsympathetic and it's unaware of the other motorists and it's something that's bound to irk me, and I'm watching that driver's behavior with a keen eye, and then eventually I get frustrated at them and I'm left with this bad feeling. I'm not a horn blower, but you know, you understand the kind of behavior we might put out there when we see that. So what I had to do is recognize it before it began. I'm driving. I see, oh, there's a driver that it's likely to make me angry. And at that point, I haven't the chemistry yet. I haven't had the emotional reaction. I have to be honest with myself and say, you know, we've been here 20 times before. We know what's going to happen next. Now is the time to decide. And there's a little bit of a teeter-totter for about 30 seconds. And like the example you gave about teaching your son how to deal with traffic, if I take the right route, the correct route, afterwards, I'm grateful. I never look back and think, I wish I had confronted that driver. I wish I had had this interaction.
That's a good example, huh? Yeah.
It's a tough thing to do, but I think it's the crux of the bike versus motor vehicle disharmony.
Now, when I took Traffic Skills 101, League of American Bicyclists, I got a lot of encouragement to good bicyclist behavior. Don't flip the bird to motorists. Don't curse at them. Even when they do terrible things to you. Is that in the same vein, kind of like trying to be courteous, extend courtesy while you're on the roadway?
Well,
or is that Pollyanna?
No, I mean, I think that would be the Olympic level. You know, you have to learn not to respond to somebody that's actively trying to provoke you. That would be at the very pinnacle of self-control. But we should start a little bit lower where we're an actor. That's you start there, and I think the natural trajectory would be to land in that in the shoes of a very conscious person. There's another issue that's brought up with your scenario, and that is what's going to happen to me on the road. This other person's in a couple thousand pound vehicle where they push a lever inside the gas pedal, and it just moves. It lurches forward. They can crush you. They might not even want to hurt you. They might even be a decent person. They equate some people in cars equate. Pushing you over with their vehicle or stepping on the gas with maybe giving you a little shove.
Right.
You know, I'm just pushing this button, you know, and then you see it in their faces. When they do something like that, they lose their control and cause a lot of damage. They have the regret because their chemistry has gone away. Now they have to live with the consequences. But to hone in on your issue, when a driver's being overly aggressive, being confrontational and dangerous, all the advice, I think the sage advice out there says don't escalate the situation.
Right.
There are those of us that feel they have some kind of other duty. Maybe they're the avenger. Maybe they're going to stand ground. And I've read about and written about many situations where a cyclist does what we're talking about. He stands up, to an aggressive motorist and ends up getting arrested. The classic scenario, and we just had it happen here in Portland, and the cyclist turns out to be a police officer. So it's been very interesting.
Tell everybody about that, Bob. I read that. I follow the Portland blogs. That's a great story. Do you remember some of the details?
Not a ton of the details, but I think enough to for your listeners to understand the scenario. And I know the intersection.
Oh do you? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So a cyclist, which was an off-duty police officer, or maybe he even was on his way to work, was coming down a pass, not much different than the kind you have all over Southern California, where you can keep up with traffic almost because it's steep. And at the bottom, there was a stop sign. And by the time the officer and one particular car got to the stop sign, they had had an incident up the hill. There are two different versions to the story, but the thumbnail sketch is that the driver and the cyclist were going at each other, veering, hitting, backing up, and wow. You know, they had that kind of an interaction. Of course, the police officer had the ability to call for police, and the driver was arrested. He has a completely different story, and you know, I don't know the truth, but it's really divided people along the
Right.
Yeah, the comment section.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Now, obviously, he wasn't in uniform, I imagine.
Exactly. That's true.
He wouldn't have gotten messed with like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's been suggested that one of the things that the police could do is have undercover officers riding in bikes, because then if you're a motorist that's a little bit flummoxed by seeing cyclists out there, you might think twice. You don't know who's riding in that bike.
Well, and that kind of raises the issue. I believe there are repeat offenders out there in the motoring public, people who are quick to, you know, shout at you, curse at you, blow their horn, crowd you. I always think that they're doing that all day long. That's my just an assumption. What do I know? Could be all wet. But I suspect that they're repeat offenders.
I think you're right. I think that behavior gets reinforced. I have often had the feeling that a motorist is treating me a certain way because of something another cyclist did. Just recently, I was riding on a kind of an exclusive little, well, it's called Skyline Boulevard, and it's all nice homes, and it's a top, has a great view. And I was riding well to the right. I had my mirror on. I saw that a federal delivery truck was behind me, and there was no traffic aside from him that I could see. I went as far as I could to the right, as far to the right as practicable, and a small sports car came by and buzzed me and beeped its horn, and my blood boiled. But I actually told myself, I thought, if I get a chance to see this person, I'm going to ask them why they did what they did. And my heart was pumping really hard, but I thought I need to relax. And sure enough, I came around the corner and I saw the car park, and the man was in his mailbox. And I pulled up and I took a picture of his license plate, and he walked up to me in a very aggressive manner, and he stood right in my face and didn't say much. And I said, "Why did you pass me so closely?" And he started his reply was, "You cyclists ride five across on the road. You block the road. You don't ride in a very safe and fair manner." And I said, "But I was as far to the right as I could be. In fact, I pride myself on being able to ride on a little strip." And he didn't say much to that, and he lit into me again, and then he told me he was a cyclist, and he rode all over the world. And I said, "Yes, but again, why are you taking it out on me? I'm a courteous cyclist. I have a mirror." And he stopped, and I didn't do it with anger. I told him, "You need to check your anger." And I looked him right in the eye. I said, "I don't know what your issues are today." I said, "I have good days and bad days as well, but there's no reason to risk my life. I haven't done anything to you." And he stopped, and he apologized. Wow. Now, if I had come up to him ready for blood, there is no way he would have apologized. He would have met me tit for tat. And I de-escalated the situation. And I know a lot of people do that. They come up to a driver, they catch, and if you begin the conversation in a very calm way, they're not going to be defensive. They almost feel guilty, and they see that maybe you'd be somebody they'd be friends with at work.
You're a reasonable person, yeah. And the fact that he was a cyclist too, yeah.
You've humanized yourself. And along that lines, I've heard of some campaigns where people have suggested riding around with a title on their jersey, you know, instead of their name. It could say dad or son or mother or father or friend, to humanize this mode of transportation.
Mm. Well, I like that, Bob. I've often thought of that, customizing a T-shirt. But I haven't thought of it along those lines. I really like that idea. That might be a side business for you, Bob, selling cyclist T-shirts that say, father of three.
Well, I think I'm late to the game. I think that already exists. And I saw one recently. It said, please don't hit me in big letters.
Yeah.
So yeah, right. It's the idea is out there, and I think it's good. You know, people ask, well, what do we need to do to change things? And I really look to the European system, like the Dutch law. I know at first people would blush when they'd hear this suggestion, but now it's starting to gain traction. And I'm gonna ring that bell every time I get a chance. We really need to talk about changing the burden of liability with right. bicycle collisions, pedestrian collisions, and other vulnerable road user collisions to the operator of the more dangerous vehicle.
Right. Now, just the insurance aspects of that would create financial incentives for safer driving.
Well, it's not just that. Exactly. It would be a financial burden and a legal, a criminal or a misdemeanor ramification as well, because you'd have two different – if I was – for instance, if I was riding in Holland and I was knocked down by a lorry or a delivery truck, the police would show up and they would ask the driver, why did you hit this cyclist? Now, the driver has the ability to rebut that presumption. The presumption is he did something wrong by knocking me off. And this really gets people's blood boiling, but they have to hear the rest of the story. He has the ability to say, well, I was driving in a safe manner. The cyclist came out of nowhere across this cross-section without any warning and rode in front of me, and there was nothing I could do. Now, that he may be able to succeed with that effort, but more often than not, the presumption is going to be, well, were you keeping an eye out for the cyclist?
There you go. And,
you're the one – because we're all – if all of a sudden there was a third mode of transportation that took cars and cut them in half and left the occupants in peril, we would say, well, do we really want this third mode of transportation on the road? And if we decided we did as a society, would we not have some special burden upon this new road user? The problem is people think the cars came first and that everyone else has to fit around the system. And as I wrote in my book, the bikes came first.
Absolutely.
Well, the horses came first, and then bikes, and then and horse-drawn carriages, then bikes, then roads, then automobiles. So that's where we are now, and I see us as in the new wave, which is people are choosing something besides motor vehicles again.
Yeah,
and I think it's great.
I do too. Well, Bob, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Frank. I enjoy chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, we'll do it again soon. And thanks for all those puppy pictures. I'm going to feature one on the blog. So come to the website, cdmcyclist.com, and see Bob's new puppy. What's the puppy's name, Bob?
Well, his proper name is Zucchini, but I call him Zuki. And you have to remember, my daughter's name is Pepper, so I've got a vegetable plot going over here.
Bob, be up in Portland again sometime in the next month. Look forward to seeing you again.
Yes, we'll go for a ride.
All right. Bye-bye, Bob.
Bye, Frank.
All right, we're back in the studio, and I'd like to say thank you to my sponsor. That's BikeTiresDirect.com. Bike Tires Direct. What else besides bike tires? Well, gear, apparel, everything you need to equip your bicycle safely. Check them out, please. BikeTiresDirect.com. Well, Bob, he's got a lot of great stories, huh? I can't wait to get him back on the show. Check out his book, in the meantime, Bicycling and the Law. If you come to the website, cdmcyclist.com, I have links direct to Amazon where you'll find his book. Well, thanks so much for listening, and good night.